Smooth, suave, sophisticated, and with real substance to back it up, is how I would describe Suprateek Chatterjee, our guest for this week, and is also, I assume, what the team of Rocky Handsome was going for, but unfortunately they fail miserably. We discuss that and lots more, including Aligarh, Himesh Reshammiya, and what makes a good film, all on this week's Bollywood Weekly. Hello everyone and welcome to another episode of Bollywood Weekly. This is your host Aditya and I'm joined this week by Suprateek Chatterjee, the entertainment editor of Huffington Post India.
Good to be here, man. Thank you.
Thank you so much for being here. In fact, I know you came a long way to be here, so definitely appreciate that.
Thank you.
We will spend some time talking about your work with HuffPost and how you got into the whole line of reviewing movies for a living.
Yeah, it's a cautionary tale.
Yeah, but first, unfortunately, the topic of the hour is the movie that just came out this week, which was Rocky Handsome.
Ah, yes, that one. So, you know, the director, Nishikant Kamath, is someone... Who stars in the movie, by the way. He's made some really good films, okay? He's made a Marathi film called Dombivli Fast, which is really good.
Yeah.
He made this really nice, you know, I mean, back then I loved it. I don't know if it will still hold up for me, but... It's still, I think it was a very nice movie for its time, called Mumbai Meri Jaan.
That was his first, I think, Hindi movie.
That was his first Hindi film. Yeah. And it had a great cast, right? It had Paresh Rawal, it had Irfan, it had K.K. Menon, all these guys. And it was a great movie. It was about the 7-Eleven train blasts.
Yeah.
Right. And he's a good director, man. But off late in the sense, like in the last 5-6 years, he's gone on this trip of becoming really commercial because I guess... As a human being, he wants to
make money,
which is fair, you know, and nobody's saying don't make commercial films, nobody's saying don't make money, but, you know, you have to do it with a certain sensibility, you can't just bung together something. So now my pet peeve with, one of my pet peeves is there in Rocky Handsome, which is the fact that it's a remake, which they've stated in the press, like in interviews, they've talked about the fact that it's a remake of the Korean film, The Man from Nowhere, which was a huge hit in Korea, very popular film. And they've said this in the interviews, but when I was watching the film, at least I don't remember seeing it. I don't remember seeing an original story by or
in the credits. You mean.
In the credits, yes.
Yeah, I don't think that was there.
Yeah, right. You don't remember that either, right?
No. I mean, to be fair, I didn't stay for the end credits. I was ready to leave the theater
exactly.
as soon as the thing finished. But in the starting, they definitely didn't say it.
Right, no? Yeah, so they didn't have those credits, So I'm to me, like, what if there's somebody out there who watches the movie who doesn't read articles about, you know, movies? And I'm sure there are a lot, like, I actually didn't know for the longest time because I sometimes try and avoid reading about a movie so that I don't know too much before I go in, right?
Yeah.
So, I didn't know till the last minute that it was a remake. Having said that, I mean, even there, you have a remake. You have a story, you have characters, everything fleshed out for you. You just need to change the language.
This was my biggest problem with the film because after watching this film, when people asked me what I thought, I was like, the plot was actually not that bad. But they needed zero effort for that because it was done for them already.
Correct.
Everything else was terrible.
Yeah.
The acting was terrible. The editing, just nothing else about this film had anything positive.
It felt lazily slapped together, as in the sense that everything but the fight sequences, it looked like it was just lazily put together ki haan chalo ye kar lete hain so that we can do the fight sequences.
Yeah.
And tell me something, what do you think of the fight sequences?
So, I mean, for me, so in general, one kind of disclaimer, so to speak, is I'm not necessarily a huge fan of
action films or action sequences as such. But that said, the action sequences still felt a bit too forced or too unrealistic. I mean, like, you know, they have all these, so like, for example, one of the only, I think, not only, but one movie that I really enjoyed, which was just all out action, is this Indonesian film called The Raid, which is kind of the gold standard for action films.
That's also being, that's also been ripped off, you know that, right?
No way.
Baghi. Tiger Shroff.
Is that really?
Yeah, yeah.
We just made that comparison on last week's episode.
No, no, the Tiger Shroff has said it. They said, he told a reporter that, yeah, they made us watch Raid Redemption on the set, man. Like,
wow, that is news to me. Okay. Well, that's interesting. But,
ruined.
Ruined.
Bollywood will ruin everything. It will find everything we love and ruin it.
Although, to be fair, I mean, we said this last week as well. To be fair, that film, at least the action sequences look good. Over here, from the trailer. But over here, I mean, it just seems very unrealistic. For example, there's, I think, 3 or 4 times in the film I counted, John Abraham at some point gets a stab or shot in his chest or in his, somewhere in his body.
Hmm.
And then he just gets up as if nothing has happened, runs around for 10 minutes, beats up a few other people.
Yeah.
And then suddenly 10 minutes later remembers he's been cut or shot and like suddenly falls to his
feet. Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, which, and the most glaring thing was in that final fight, okay?
Hmm.
Which never should have happened because they resorted to that old cliche of the villain giving long speech before killing the person. You know, like they resorted to that. And that fight is happening, and okay, yeah, there's a lot of like this shot in higher frame rates, and there's a lot of choreography at work, and it's impressive. My complaint was it wasn't bloody enough.
Hmm.
Because when you're doing this, the whole fun in this genre is the blood and the gore.
Yeah.
Like, that's where it comes from.
The other thing also,
and it was sanitized and toned down.
Yeah, and the other thing also, when you said choreography, that reminded me, which I felt, it really did, like, that last scene especially, it didn't feel like a fight between two people who are actually fighting something. It felt like a boxing match with a referee in a ring. They both, there's literally even moments where they both just stand face to face in like the ready pose, like a martial arts pose. Yeah, exactly. Waiting for each other to
No, my favorite part of that scene was, in the, you know, so when it comes down to those two guys, John Abraham and that other guy.
Yeah.
If you remember the beginning of the scene, he has a gun. He's the only guy there who has a gun for some reason. All right. And he has a clear shot at John all the time.
Yeah.
Whilst John is fighting off 3-4 people and knifing them left, right, and center, he could have shot him at any point. At any point. He just stays away out of politeness. I don't know what.
And I don't remember if that was the same scene or another scene, but the same guy, when he has the gun, but he shoots at John's feet instead of shooting at John himself, which I thought
That was to rattle him, I think. I think that was deliberate. But it was illogical. So, I mean, that is the problem. Mm. The fact that the action sequences are not satisfactory. Yeah. One. And the rest of the movie is that bad.
Yeah.
Like, that bad. The acting, storyline, everything, man. Like,
I mean, John, and I think John Abraham has to take some of the blame for this because he's also the producer of the movie. And I think I tried to count in the first half of the movie, I think he says a total of 10 or 11 sentences in the whole movie.
You counted it.
He's just there, like, looking, no expression on his face. People talk to him, he doesn't respond. And, like, I know they're trying to build this whole inner troubled personality, but it doesn't work because there's no expression in his eyes that conveys that.
There's that really weird scene where he walks away, where she calls him her dad.
Yeah, exactly.
And she walks away. He just walks away.
Yeah.
And it was so awkward. Like, it was funny.
Hmm. Yeah, and then the other, there also is not a movie which, there was no emotional connect. So, I mean, there is, if you look at, you know, there's a little girl in the movie that is one of the, is the center of the story in some ways.
Mm.
And she gets kidnapped. And, you know, she has a very, you know, troubled life. Her mother is abusing drugs, this, that. A lot of, you know.
Did you love that scene where she gets high, she does heroin or whatever, and then she reacts as though she's having an orgasm.
Yeah.
And I'm like, wow, man, that's, I don't think that's how drugs work. In slow motion, she has an orgasm. It's crazy.
There's also 3 item songs I counted, I think.
No, which, one, oh, that one was, of course, throwback.
Rock the Party.
Rock the Party.
Yeah.
It was so bad, I mean, in that song, did you notice that half the song was that that woman, Noora Fateh,
yeah,
her name is,
dancing,
doing this one step where she's like punching her own
head. Yeah, I saw that.
And they just kept repeating that. And she it looked so ridiculous. Like it was intercut with a fight scene, which as an idea is cool. Like it's a cool thing to have a song playing and then intercut it with a violent fight. Great idea on paper. But the way it was executed was horrendous. It's almost like a metaphor for this film.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, it was just the laziest possible way to execute it. They took one step and they, like, nichoed the hell out of it and just, like,
overused
it.
Yeah. But yeah, so going back to the point about, you know, there's a scene where, or not one scene, actually multiple scenes, where the girl gets kidnapped or she's kind of looking at her mother wasting her life away and she's very clearly alone and sad and like has no one to support. But at no point during any of these scenes did I feel bad for her or feel any kind of emotional connect or, you know, it was just that, okay, this is happening, cool. And I don't know why that was, whether it was the acting, the editing, but it just didn't really come across.
See, I think, I mean, even aesthetics-wise, there was a very weird thing happening in the movie where they were trying to be super faithful to the original.
Hmm.
So they've tried to even make the film look like the original.
Okay.
Like, a lot of the cinematography, like the shots of, you know, there was that scene where John and the girl are walking down this alley.
Yeah.
That, the way they've shot it and color graded it and everything, it resembles all the shots in the rain.
Hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
It resembles downtown Seoul, like Korea, like it doesn't look like a place in India, and it's got that the aesthetics of the original, you know, but which was just weird. You set it in Goa and you're doing this, and then you add like loud background score.
Mm.
Even the thing you said about John Abraham's not saying a lot of things, the original is a lot like that, right?
Yeah.
He doesn't say much,
mm-hmm.
except he did it with some style and he was believable, like he didn't look like he'd been clubbed in the face.
On the point of Goa, of course, every single ridiculous stereotype you can think about Goa is portrayed in this movie. Drugs, prostitution, foreigners ruining
Russians,
India.
Russians,
of course.
I mean, no, I guess if you do set a movie in Goa, you know, it's hard to avoid these, I guess, to an extent. But I mean, those brothers.
The Ferreira, something brothers.
Kevin and Luke Ferreira. One was, of course, Nishi himself.
Yeah.
Was, but can we talk about the other guy? That other guy.
His accent was something from, I don't know what that was supposed to be.
Dude, his overacting. So wait, I looked up this guy. I even wrote about him in my review. So this guy's name is, what is his name? I can't remember his name right now. But, Teddy Maurya. He's Teddy Maurya. He's been in films, in a bunch of films before. And I think he's also production designer and art director, by the way. He's not just an actor. You remember Jab We Met?
Yeah, yeah.
You remember Hotel Decent?
I read this in your review.
Right. So he's the guy from the Hotel Decent scene. He was great in that scene. So clearly he can act. So this clearly seems like a very misguided, like, misdirection, basically. Like, just a very bad approach, which is part Heath Ledger's Joker, part Crime Master Gogo. Like.
There's the first villain as well, who I don't remember his name in the movie anymore, but the guy that they frame and these brothers then take over his empire, so to speak.
Right.
That guy's overacting was also on a completely different scale.
Yeah, he was whacking his head.
It was crazy. Was there anything good about Rocky Hansen?
Not much, man. I mean, sorry, but like, I mean, what?
I guess one good thing is that Shruti Hassan only is there for 5 minutes in the movie.
Seriously, man. Like, I don't know what. She's always that's her thing now. Like, she just comes in these movies. She was in another movie. Was it Gabbar Is Back? Yeah, she was in Gabbar Is Back as well. In a similar role, like inconsequential, comes in for a little amount of time and still is probably the weakest thing about the movie, you know?
Yeah.
And, Shruti Hassan and all that was crap. I would say the action scenes and the way they were shot and the way the film looked is a bit of an achievement.
Mm-hmm.
I'll give it that.
Yeah.
Although it looked really bad in some scenes, so they shot some scenes in Hyderabad's Ramoji Film City.
Yep, yep.
and they were green screen, and you can see the green screen.
Hmm.
As in, you can see that it's not at the location, and it's the background is fake. Which I mean, in 2016,
it should never be.
People doing work on YouTube are getting that right. Yeah, how are you releasing a feature film in theaters? Yes.
There's also some just really kind of overdone cliches. Like there's that one scene. I mean, this is not unique to this movie. It happens in a lot of movies, but it was just so blatantly obvious that I don't remember what happens anymore. But where John is standing there, and then right at the exact moment that something dramatic happens, a whole torrent of rain just splashes onto his body at this specific right moment. And in fact, I mean, I rewatched Kapoor and Sons today for the second time because some people wanted to go, so I went to them again. And in that scene as well, in the main climax scene where everything comes together, it starts raining and thundering, which is, you know, fine. Bollywood does that. We accept it.
Hmm.
But even there, it's done much more subtly. It doesn't suddenly start raining right then.
In that scene, in fact, Ratna Pathak Shah, do you remember? She gives this reaction like this.
Exactly. Like, oh my God.
Annoyed, angry, and also like surprised sort of. Which is just, you're right. It's a rain suddenly falling in a scene like this is a cliche.
Yeah.
But it's handled so much better there. And I think, when you handle a cliche well.
Exactly.
Or unexpectedly, it's a lot better, obviously.
In case anyone did like this movie, good news for you is that John Abraham is doing two more all-out action movies this year. So, lots to look forward to there.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I think, unless you have anything to add, Rocky Hudson.
No, man. And I think, but this is, I have to say, I was talking about this with someone yesterday. This whole trend of blatantly remaking / copying, and to me this is more copying, because if you've not put an original story by credit in your film, I don't think, you know, it's, I mean, okay, you may have bought the rights, but if you're not, it's not full disclosure, and it's not honest. For example, if I didn't know that, then I would say, okay, good story,
exactly.
But now I can't credit the writer for the story because it's somebody else's story. No, but the fact is that this is part of a slightly worrisome trend in Hindi cinema where it's a very easy thing to do to buy the rights of something and just reset it in. So, I mean, we saw a film called Brothers last year, which was Warrior, and they fucked that up really badly. sorry for swearing.
That's fine.
But I mean, and it flopped. It didn't do well at all, despite having an Akshay Kumar in it and a Sid Malhotra. It did not do well.
Yeah.
And, you know, the thing is that it's a formula. You can see it.
Mm-hmm.
Take a plot, slap on some, you know, get some stars in there.
Yeah.
Slap on some extra Bollywood melodrama movements or songs or some elements, some masala elements as such. And just release it in theatres. And, you know, the way these films are turning out, they're looking like that. The final products are looking like lazy, half-assed efforts.
Yeah.
And if you can't respect your audience, why the hell are you making these?
Yeah. But I think, I mean, the fact that that flopped, though, is a positive sign because audiences now are becoming a bit more, demanding more from the filmmakers, from the movies that come out. Because they, like, you know, for example, even we sadly reference this a lot on this show, but Shandar last year, audiences just did not give it light of day. Even, I mean, Bombay Velvet is a film I really liked, but if you don't now give the audience something that they want, and I mean, really, barring maybe the likes of Salman and Shah Rukh, who just have such a big fan following that they can.
You know what happened?
Dilwale also.
Dilwale did not make as, I mean, it didn't do as well
as
Bajirao Mastani.
Yeah.
Which was not a Khan film. Right?
Exactly.
Ranveer Singh and Deepika and Priyanka, who are all very big stars.
But so that's another example of the fact that, and it's a good thing actually. I mean, this is what needs to happen.
This audiences is what needs to happen.
To respond to, you know, bad films and let producers and directors know that if you put out, you know, garbage, we're not going to watch it.
Yeah. And you know why I think this happens, it's happening rather. Mm. Is because people have realized, although we are a huge movie-watching country, now there are two problems. One is, despite being so obsessed with movies, we actually don't have that many movie theaters in this country. The penetration of screens per population is very low.
Right.
We are like way lesser than China of course, much, much lesser than, say, United States or France, which are, or UK, which are big movie markets.
Yeah.
So what happens is that, I mean, you need to watch, people need to pay a ticket to watch a movie for the industry to make money.
Yeah.
Or buy a DVD or whatever.
Sure.
Now what happens is piracy is rampant.
Hmm.
Most people watch pirated films.
Yeah.
A large part of the audience is watching. Like, if you go by train or bus or whatever, you'll see people watching entire movies on their phones.
Yeah.
You know? And the fact is that you don't even need to watch a movie anymore to be entertained.
Yeah, exactly. That's the thing. There are so many more options now when it comes to content. And the fact that you have now all these YouTubers and web series and stuff coming out.
You have web series, you have TV shows. You need not just watch Indian, you can watch international stuff.
Exactly.
And
now you have also all these apps that make it easier. You have Hotstar, you have Netflix now, and Eros now, a few others, where you don't necessarily need to, you know, watch it in theater. And anyway, now theatrical runs also last like 2-3 weeks max.
2-3 weeks is 3 weeks is like amazing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Back in the day, you know, where it used to be 150 days and all of that is...
No, but you have to understand that recreation for Indians, by and large in this country, till about 20 years ago, used to mean, for the most part, used to mean going out for a movie.
Yeah.
A movie was a family outing. It was a friends outing. It was a huge part of your weekend.
Hmm.
Now you have many more options on a weekend.
Exactly, yeah.
You know, a lot of things. Malls have opened up. Entertainment parlors have opened up. Video game parlors. Bars, different cultures have come around. You know, you don't need to watch a movie anymore. So you better, I think what people are saying is that if it's not good, it's not good. We don't need to waste time in this anymore.
Yep.
We'll pause there to take a quick break, but there's a lot more interesting chat coming up, so please do stick around. In the meantime, to give you a dose of some early 2000s nostalgia, here are Bombay Rockers with Rock the Party.
About a couple of other movies
that
we, for various reasons, have not been able to cover on the show.
Okay.
The first one we'll get out of the way very quickly. Tera Suru.
Tera Suru.
Himesh Reshammiya's latest foray into
acting. Dude, it's been, 2 weeks or 3 weeks since that film, and I have scrubbed it. I've tried to scrub it from my mind. Thoda hai, there's some post-traumatic stress happening. I mean, what do you say, Yaar? I mean, that film, it's a joke. It's an industry joke.
I mean, I haven't seen the film, so
you haven't seen it.
I haven't.
I mean, it's got Himesh in this lean, skinny avatar suddenly, okay? Yeah. Trying to look like a Korean pop star, and he's like some assassin. Okay,
that's a great comparison, actually.
He really looks like, yeah, I mean, and you know, the weirdest thing about that movie was it was a weird, stupid plot, which made no sense, and it has a bad actress and a bad actor, and but it had all these roles and cameos by really well-known or good people.
Like Nasiruddin Shah.
Like Nasiruddin Shah, who plays an Italian man who speaks perfect Hindi, by the way. or Italian or Spanish or something like that. What is the name? Santino. Something like that, yeah. Monica Dogra. I mean, I'm just saying that she has not been in this kind of cinema before. Shekhar Kapoor had a role.
Oh, wow.
Shekhar Kapoor, Oscar-nominated filmmaker Shekhar Kapoor was in this movie in a Himesh Reshamya film. This happened in 2016.
Wow, that's... Anyway, was not really disappointed at missing that one out.
Yeah, I think nobody cared about it. It flopped. It sank without a trace.
Then the other movie that we will hopefully spend a bit more time on is Aligarh.
Ah.
Which was... it got a lot of coverage and a lot of people responded very positively to it. And it's, you know, the subject matter is such that in a country like India, it's bound to generate attention, positive and negative. Theatrically, it didn't do very well.
Not at all. Yeah.
Which I at least was disappointed about.
Hmm.
But again, this is a film that I wasn't able to see. So what were your impressions?
So, you know, you're speaking to either the right person or the wrong person here.
Huh.
Because I am, I think, one of the very few critics who did not completely love it.
Okay.
I liked many things about it. And I liked that it was a very honest effort and a very sincere attempt to make a good film.
Hmm.
It faltered on many levels for me.
Okay, like what?
So, I'll tell you the good stuff about it. The performances, on an average, were much better than what you see in the average Hindi film. It was shot beautifully. It was shot by Satya Rai Nagpal. He was possibly one of the best DOPs working in India today.
Okay.
He shot Gurinder Singh's films, Anne Gode Dadan and Jyoti Ku. But he's a very good filmmaker. Cinematographer.
Yeah.
So, it had a very nice look to it, which really, like, gives it a lot of character. I think, you know, both Manoj Bajpayee and Rajkumar were really sincere in their roles.
Yeah.
I had some problems with both of them. I think Rajkumar was overall actually better for me.
Oh, okay.
Because I could buy him, as flawed as his Mallu accent was.
Hmm.
He was being a Malayali journalist, a real person, Jiggu Sebastian, whom I spoke to, I interviewed also, so I know what he sounds like and everything. And I mean, he slipped up with the accent here and there, because he's not Malayali.
Yeah.
But I think he was far more convincing as a character.
Yeah.
With Manoj Bajpayee, what happened was it was a performance. I know his performance has gotten a lot of praise, and it's already getting like national award buzz and all that.
Yeah.
But I think it was a very mannered performance, if you know what I mean. A display of very obvious acting.
Right.
Which for me is actually defeats the purpose of
acting.
Exactly,
yeah.
You know? Yeah. So I wouldn't say it's not a bad performance. I would not
But it comes that. Across that he's playing a role.
He's playing a role and it's showy.
Mm-hmm.
And He looks nothing like the real Siras.
Yeah.
So I mean, there's a lot of liberties have been taken in the film, because for example, the whole film shows Deepu and Siras interacting. That's
which never actually happened.
Which is fine. Mm-hmm. Cinematic liberties, you know.
Yeah.
Is not a problem. So yeah, but apart from these things, I had a few problems with how it was. I put it, there were some things in the script that didn't quite work for me.
Okay.
I wish they hadn't shown us the actual incident where Siras is with the rickshaw puller and they're in his house and they're having sex or whatever.
Yeah.
And then they get busted.
Yeah.
Now that same scene is shown to us from four different perspectives.
Right.
Throughout the film, which I felt like was unnecessary.
Overkill.
Not that, it's overkill. It's not a cringe thing or anything, but it's just it didn't feel necessary to me.
Right.
And a lot of the worst the part of the movie that really got me annoyed. And I've seen the film twice. Mm. I saw it at Mami when it opened.
Yeah.
And I was similarly disappointed, and I had written, I was doing a diary for Mami for HuffPost. So I wrote about the film. I wrote a couple of paras about it, saying how, this is how I felt. But when it came for release again, I said I must review it properly from the lens of a normal mainstream release.
Yeah.
Because, you know, Mami's unfair.
Yeah, it's a festival.
It's a festival. You're competing with like Jafar Panahi and all that. So it's perhaps it's the wrong, you know, the playing field is not level there. So anyway, my point is that it was really crippled by this one portion, which is a court sequence.
Right.
Where, I mean, they fight against Aligarh University
for
suspending him. And I found those court scenes unbearably fake and stagey.
Right.
The female lawyer was over the top. Ashish Vidyarthi was, I mean, I couldn't buy him as it didn't feel real, you know?
Yeah.
And the judge, you know, the entire sequence, all the scenes in the court are from the, like, an over the shoulder of the judge.
Yeah.
A judge who's silent throughout, whom we never, hardly ever hear speak, if at all. I don't think he ever spoke. Or maybe he whispered something, but we never saw his face.
Right.
And in any actual real courtroom trial, the judge is speaking a lot usually.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. If you've seen the movie Court.
Yeah.
Even if you've seen Shahid.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. If you,
yeah, I mean, the judge is a significant part of any court
proceeding. Yeah, which is what I was surprised, because Hansal Mehta has made Shahid, which had pretty good courtroom scenes, you know, until something like a court came along.
Exactly.
It was quite realistic compared to Tariq Pe Tariq and whatever
Hindi cinema does. It's interesting. It's a slightly different perspective than what most people have done, but I think I won one line from your, it may have been the title of the review maybe, but which I found very interesting was, it's a very significant film, but that doesn't necessarily make it a...
And I think a lot of, I mean, obviously that the tag, you know, ends there, this thing happens in Hollywood all the time.
Yeah.
That something is significant, it's important, it's an important issue, and you know, you give it like, I mean, 12 Years a Slave got an Oscar based on that emotion.
Yeah, exactly.
So, I mean, I think when you're a critic, you have to be as detached and as not emotional about things as possible. So, even if it's a film is issue-based that you love and you resonate with it, it resonates with you.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean that it's automatically a good film.
Okay, so I was going to save this for later in the show, but now that it's come up, I'll just bring it up here. So I want to ask you, because I've noticed, I've been reading your reviews for a while, I've noticed that, not for the sake of being contrarian, but you're quite okay with taking a different perspective to what general consensus seems to be. So this we've talked about. Even Kapoor and Son, which has gotten more or less positive reviews across the board, you had a certain issues with the film, which you were not happy with. And I kind of see where you're coming from as well. On the flip side, you somehow found some positives in Himesh Reshammiya's previous outing, The Exposé.
Wow. You've done your research. I'm impressed. Nice.
Because I read the reviews all the time, and like these things stick out because it's so different from what everyone else is saying. So, I'm curious to know, so when you're watching a film, whether not necessarily from a critic perspective, but just from watching a film, what do you look for in terms of what makes a good film or what you enjoy while watching film?
You look for a lot of things, but I think if you have to really distill it down to one thing, the one thing you look for a movie is honesty. If you, there was this, whose book was it? Tarkovsky's book called Sculpting in Time.
Okay.
In which he said that all great art, all good art, is only about one thing, truth. So, or honesty, truth.
Yeah.
You know, in that sense. Like, so it's true, right? Everything from comedy to visual arts to films to music. Honesty and truth are the most important things in any, you know, creative work.
Yeah.
So, when I, so for, you brought up Himesh's last film, The Exposé.
Yeah.
I didn't mind it so much. I did obviously say that, look, guys, I am saying that this is obviously not great cinema. But
yeah,
you know what I liked about that movie was it was honest. It was, Himesh wasn't playing a glorified hero. He was kind of almost the, he was this weird anti-hero slash fool of the film.
Right.
he was this impossibly vain 60s movie star who was as much the butt of the jokes as he was, you know, a lead character.
Yeah.
And you had a Yo-Yo Honey Singh acting. And he wasn't bad, you know. He was okay. Like, he was...
I could imagine him not being that bad.
Like, actually, I mean, the guy has swag, yeah. He's got... He knows what to do in front of a camera, yeah.
Yeah.
And I found it... It was really stupid. But I found, like, you know, there's some value in... It did not pretend to be anything else.
Yeah. It was self-aware, basically.
It was very self-aware. And that is what I liked. And it wasn't trying to manipulate you. It wasn't trying to be one thing... And try to sell you the idea that, look, we're making it. This is actually a good film. Like, it wasn't trying to say that at all.
Yeah.
So that's why I didn't like hate it so much. But aside from that, you mentioned Kapoor and Sons and Aligarh and all these contrarian views that I've had.
Huh.
And I think I get a lot of, you know, I get a lot of jokes for that from people who know me to my face. And I'm sure there's a lot more behind my back.
Do you ever sit and read comments of all your articles? Or
Sometimes, man. After a point, I don't. HuffPost, actually, we somehow don't get a lot of comments unless an article goes like super viral.
Right.
Then we get a lot of comments.
Hmm.
So I think my Dilwale review and my Masti Zade Kya Tum Hai review, they have a lot of comments. And after a point, I stop reading. It's all like, it's either you are awesome and I agree.
Yeah.
Or you suck, you're a Bengali leftist anti-national person. So, there's no, I mean, if somebody actually makes a compelling argument, I'd be happy to read it.
Yeah.
If they, no, yeah.
One of my favorite pastimes is reading comments, not just on Bollywood reviews, on anything. Because the internet is just filled with people just talking absolute nonsense. And it's very entertaining most of the time. Cool. So then, one other thing I wanted to ask you. So what actually brought you towards this line of work? Being a film critic or, you know, looking at movies, basically watching movies for a living or not even for a living, but as, you know, this is what you
spend most of your time. I grew up not just loving movies, but it was very, it was something that I think my parents, encouraged quite a bit.
Yeah.
In terms of watching movies. We had a VCR. My dad would go to Singapore and get a lot of the latest video cassettes. And we'd watch them. All my video cassettes have Mohammed Mustafa shopping center.
That's hilarious.
Yeah. And he bought this book of film reviews once.
Huh.
It was a, you know what it was? It was a Blockbuster, you know, the video
chain. Yeah.
It was a fat guide. Blockbuster guide. So all the titles available in Blockbuster, they had mini reviews of each.
Yeah.
It was fat book.
Hmm.
I read that entire book, cover to cover, many times.
Wow.
So I had read film reviews of every.
And you were how old at this point?
I was 11 or 12.
Oh wow. Yeah. Okay.
So I was obsessed, and like my granddad used to collect a lot of magazines. I remember he had every edition of Filmfare, Screen, Stardust. Ever since for a certain period, you know, and I sat in summer vacations, I was sitting
and read all of them.
So that happened. I unfortunately was good at studies, so I ended up going to an engineering college. Suddenly I'm 18 and I find myself in an engineering college, and in Pune. And what happened was I chose to go to Pune because I wanted to get out of Bombay.
Sure.
Have my freedom and all those things.
Yeah.
So, I got very interested in cinema, especially there because they had the FTIA and the National Film Archive of India.
Yeah.
So, in second year, for example, I went to FTIA campus for the first time because some filmmaker saw me playing the guitar. So, I'm also a musician.
Right? Yeah.
So, they saw me playing the guitar at some college event and he wanted me to play some guitar for the background score of the short film.
Okay.
So that's when I went to the campus for the first time. Mm. I saw it and like, this is crazy. This is awesome. I want to be here.
Yeah.
And that was my dream then. So I decided then that I have to go to FTI.
Mm.
But I had to complete engineering. So, and I hated it. But I was like, you know what?
Technically, you didn't have to complete. You could have just dropped out.
I didn't want to waste. I was already like 1.5 years in. Yeah. So okay, I said, I don't want to waste a year and a half of my life.
Hmm.
And it's suiting me fine. I'm just like here in Pune having a good time.
Yeah.
not living at home.
Yeah.
So I was like, let's just do this. Let's just watch a lot of films.
Yeah.
And learn about. I did a lot of things. I played in a band.
Huh.
I did a lot of theater.
Yeah.
College level theater.
Yeah.
So all these things really helped me develop my understanding of how storytelling and all these elements work. Plus, I watched a lot of films.
Yeah.
I watched a lot of films at home. I would go to NFAI. I would get films from here and there. I would go to the theater to watch even the, you know, the small releases.
Yeah.
And that was the period when, you know, the odd decent film would, like a Hazaro Khwaish Aisi would
sure.
come
yeah.
to a theater.
Yeah.
And, you know, I would watch that and I would think, okay, wow, there's something happening in this
mm-hmm.
industry. Like we are starting to, Anurag Kashyap became a thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, Black Friday happened. Yeah. All these things happened. Dibakar came around, Khosla, Ghosla, Oye Lucky. You know, so all these things happened. So I graduated and I got into FTI.
Okay.
I got in for sound. I didn't take it up because I didn't want to spend another 4 years in college after already spending 4 years in college.
Fair, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah. And so what although happened?
Most people working now would probably give anything to go back to college for another few years.
Yeah, yeah, I know. No, but you know, I'll tell you what, like, it would have been 4 or 5 years of me in college and asking my parents for money to
exactly.
you know, have a beer. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that I didn't want to do. And around that time, I was also looking for jobs and I made it very clear to my parents that, look, I'm back. I got the degree you wanted.
Yeah.
Now, please let me do something else. I don't want to work in software. I hate it. I was an IT engineer.
Yeah.
So they were like, okay, you don't want to work in software. What do you want to do? I said, I can write. I wanted. I was pretty good at English and I used to write. I used to win a lot of essay competitions in school. So I said, I'm good at writing. You know this.
Yeah.
Let me write. Finally, please.
Sure.
So they were like, okay, get a job. Like, just get a job. Do whatever.
Yeah.
So I really tried 2 months. I sent my resume out everywhere. I made calls. I made, like, dropped into offices.
Yeah.
And, you know, did a lot of, like, pounding the payments. And finally, 2 months after that, I got a call for an interview from Mumbai Mirror Online. So what happened was, I went for an interview. I gave a writing and editing test.
Mm-hmm.
They took me in. I mean, I passed.
Yeah.
Interviewed me and then they said, okay, we'll get back to you. Coincidentally, the same day I came to know that I've been selected for FTI.
Okay. So and this was happening
parallelly. Yeah.
Yeah.
That very evening I came to know that I have gotten a job at the Times of India.
Okay.
For the Mumbai Mirror Online team. So it was a huge dilemma. One was like, you know, this is a dream I've had for 3-4 years.
Yeah.
And one is a job, which would pay me money, and it was cool.
And it's a good job, like based on your interest, it's a job that you would enjoy.
Exactly. So I think I took the more practical choice, which I don't really regret because, you know, if I gone to FTI, I'd still be there today. because I that's the batch I would have been part of, by the way, the batch which is protesting right now.
Oh yeah, of course.
Yeah, so I would have still been in college at the age of nearly 30.
So it's worked out well for you.
Yeah. So, after that, it was like I've been in journalism and I worked in Mumbai Mirror Online. I worked in Midday. I worked in Hindustan Times. I worked in, now Huffington Post for the last year.
Yeah.
I have written for a bunch of publications, Elle, Rhino.
Mm-hmm.
Somewhere in my second year in Mumbai Mirror, I started doing reviews.
Mm-hmm.
Because I managed to convince everyone that I can do them.
Sure.
And it's been on. I've been reviewing mostly. I was reviewing Hollywood films for the first 2-3 years.
Yeah.
I only started reviewing Bollywood when I started writing for First Post in 2013.
Okay.
That was the first time I regularly started watching and reviewing Bollywood films. And I think I've become a little dumber since.
It can be a bit of a soul-searching experience when you're after it. I found out since starting this podcast as well. It's also very interesting because a lot of times, like, your friends will make plans, being like, oh, let's watch Deadpool or let's watch Batman vs. Superman or let's watch something. I'll be like, sorry, guys, I need to go watch Rocky Hudson and record a podcast about it. So, you know, have fun.
No, but I guess what's happening is I'm hoping and I'm always optimistic that good, better films are being made.
Yeah.
Every year we see more of them, I'd like to think.
Yeah, I think so. At least in the last 1 or 2 years, there have been much more. I mean, I don't want to say better or worse, but more, a wider range of films about different types of topics, different genres, different ways of, you know, showing. It's not just earlier in the 90s, early 2000s, you just had the same formulaic Dharma Productions, Karan Johar films in different guises and forms. Now there's a lot more variation. You have films, you have kind of, in fact, I did an episode last year, with just in the early days of this podcast, about how Bollywood doesn't have that many thrillers. And since then, we've seen quite a few, actually. We had a film like Neerja, Wazir was a thriller as well. Not all of these were necessarily good films, but...
But they, I mean, they entered a genre.
Yeah, and then you have films like Piku, which is just about, you know, everyday family life, not necessarily a big hero saving the day, etc.
Yeah.
Very real, again, I think, to your point, very honest film.
Absolutely.
So a lot of people, there's a lot more filmmakers now getting opportunities. There's a lot more people trying different things.
Yeah.
And I think when there's more experimentation, I mean, good things are bound to come out of that.
Yeah. And I think it's always heartening. So what, of course, the biggest film of the year will still be a Salman Khan film. You cannot, that's not going to change overnight.
Yeah.
This country is too diverse, it's too complex. It's not going to change overnight. Like it or not, the Neerjas of the world are being appreciated by the city audience.
Yeah.
Your small town and, you know, like, rural audience is not, that's not their scene, you know, it's
too,
it doesn't have anything that they
associate with cinema. And the box office figures reflect that. I mean, Ninja is never going to be a 100 crore film.
No, but that's because it won't even get that sort of a release,
exactly,
you know.
Yeah.
It won't even get to that many screens.
Sure.
Ninja actually had a very interesting thing. They released in fewer screens and then they increased. So, a lot of that, I mean, a lot of it just comes down to that. If you have a star in your film gets a wider release. If it gets a wider release, it's going to make more money unless it's a really shit film.
Yeah.
Which happened with Dilwale, for example. Or Rawan.
Yeah, you know? Exactly.
So, but what is heartening is when a fairly well-known star or a big star does a small but good film.
Yeah.
Which may not be perfect, which will still have, so like I may have criticized Aligarh or Kapoor and Sons.
Yeah.
But to me, I'm very happy that these films got made and got released.
Of course, yeah.
You know, because they are elevating the standard of Hindi films.
Sure.
They are helping it. Even if they have problems, I would rather watch even a Bombay Velvet for that matter, you know.
Yeah.
It tried something, right? Mm-hmm. It failed disastrously for me also, like many other people.
Yeah.
But it tried something.
Yeah.
I mean, I'd rather watch these, even the failed attempts, rather than, you know, like a...
Rocky Hudson.
Rocky, or a Masti Zade or a Kya.
Yeah,
I mean, that's not even, let's not even
that's not even a comparison.
Yeah, that's just terrible.
Cool. But thank you so much for being here. This was a lot of fun.
Thank you. Thank you
so
much.
Yeah, hopefully we can get you back sometime.
Sure. No problem, man.
Thanks so much for listening. That was our show and hope you enjoyed it. You know what I'm about to say next, but I'm going to say it anyway. Please subscribe to Bollywood Weekly on iTunes using the podcast app, or on SoundCloud, either on the web or using the app available on iOS and on Android. You can also follow us on Facebook and Twitter. The links are in the description. And please do spread the word and let us know what you think in the comments. If there's anything you want to see us doing differently or anything you want to see more of, we will be happy to take all your feedback. And if you want to just share your views about what you think about these movies, we will be happy to feature those as well. See you next week.